From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of August, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at GlobalComResearch.com. And then a bit later in the program, Eric Snodgrass will join us to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. Along the way today, I'll tell you a little bit about returning to campus and what it'll be like for students, faculty, and staff, and how the university is working to mitigate the coronavirus. And it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, September corn finished 0.75 cents lower at 324.5. December down 0.75 cents as well. It finished at 338. And March contract at 349.25, down 0.5 cents. Next year's May corn down 0.25, 356.75 the settlement price there. Soybeans for the day, August contract down 3.75. It settled at 903.5. November at 898.75, 0.75 cents lower. And the January futures down 0.75 cents at 903.75. Next year's July down 2.25 at 914.25. The bean oil futures 7 cents lower. Bean meal down 40 cents for the day. Soft red winter wheat in the July contract at 524.75, 1.5 cents higher. The hard red contract there finished at 459.75. And that was up 0.5 cents for the afternoon. Live cattle futures in Chicago, they finished up 55 cents. Feeders were down 1.25 cents, and lean hogs were 12.5 cents higher on the afternoon for this Friday. Mike Zuzulo now joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us for the day. I kind of like the action at the end of the week, despite the fact that the markets didn't do much today. They held on to all the gains all week long. That's a good deal.
Yeah, and you've had two of the last three reports come out and had a market reaction that was a higher price. And this week in particular looked a lot like the June acreage report when it came to the corn, because we had such a sharp move up after those numbers that for the week we're going to be up about 3.6% in corn, and in beans, and over 5.5% higher in the corn market, while the wheat is going to be probably up about 1% when it's all said and done. I think this is one of those markets, Todd, that when we talked about the USDA report on the last commodity week, and we talked about how the market looked and was shaping up, and this before the big Iowa storm this past Monday, it seemed as though it was shaping up a lot like 2016. And I feel like that's really still on par with where we're at right now. We had a very strong move up in the corn between this time period and August 19th, where we made a high. And then the wheat led us lower going into the end of the month. In fact, we made lower lows at the end of the month of August back in 2016. And that was led by the wheat going down 11%. That wheat going down 11% was due to the dollar rallying because Great Britain decided to leave Europe and leave the European Union. So I think a lot of similarities here with 2016, and something to think about as we step back into Sunday night and Monday's trade, knowing that the U.S. and China are not going to meet at this point.
When you said they decided to leave Europe, all I saw was the Monty Python skit with the bankers headed to New York.
Yes.
Oh, well, levity on a Friday afternoon, I suppose. What if anything, do you want producers to consider at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is the trade has not been able to get its arms around the storm and how big of a potential damage to the supply side that we saw. That's on one side of the equation. The other side of the equation goes back to the report. USDA brought the big yield, but they also brought the big demand. And when you look at the world ending stocks of soybeans, for instance, you had only about a 300,000 metric ton increase. It did not move hardly at all. And when you look at the stocks to use ratios in all three, wheat, corn, and soybeans, still very much in the ball game because USDA brought that export demand and that feed demand to these reports. So it puts more onus on the U.S.-China trade negotiations to continue to go well and the relationship to stay good going into November's election. But it also, I think, makes the funds reconsider that supply keeps outpacing demand. I don't think you can say that anymore if you're an investment fund.
What do we think we know, if anything, yet about the corn in Iowa that was disrupted by the storm earlier in the week?
Well, the numbers keep getting bigger, and so a conservative estimate now is about a 3-bushel national yield decline in the U.S. corn. And so you go back below 180 for a national yield. I mean, the Iowa Soybean Association just came out Friday afternoon, thanks to RMA data, saying that now Iowa's going to have 14 million acres of damage, and the total Midwestern damage is approaching 38 million acres. And so this gets bigger, and so I think the trade does need to come back and revisit this whole thing.
Does it make you cautious as to marketings at this point? Because many will be looking at this and saying, well, maybe I need to pull the trigger on something.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I think that if you have not done anything this year, it is a good idea to sell into the rally. I would be looking at next week to start beans, and then maybe by the end of next week to do corn if I can hit higher price levels led by the wheat joining the rest of the group and taking us higher. I think that the other side of that goes back to the crop insurance, the PLC, the margin protection policies. You may need to get something underneath you on the long side for those bushels that you do not have covered under the crop insurance, or part of the bushels that you have covered under this type of crop insurance protection, because the higher the D's corn price goes during this next 30, 40 days, the more likely you're going to be getting less in terms of a payout. So I think you're going to have to look at it individually. I'm still a hedger on rallies because of what's going on with the November elections, but I'm not at the profitable levels I'd like to be at this stage. Hopefully a week from today, you and I will be talking about that.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Up next, I'll tell you just a little tiny bit about how the University of Illinois is working to keep the faculty, students, and staff safe as everyone returns to campus. You know, starting Monday, the University of Illinois will be really open for the first time since March. Faculty, staff, and students will all be on campus, and campus has been really working hard to find efficient ways to mitigate the coronavirus. Some time ago, it developed a saliva test. It's fast and it's simple, and I've taken it twice, once early on and then just after my return from that trip I did to North Dakota. You spit in the tube, and the results come back from the university really fast. My last time, it was 4 hours. Just yesterday, the university released an app for both Android and iOS phones. It's designed to complement that testing. I talked with Bill Sullivan about it.
The app is called Safer Illinois. People who go through the saliva testing process on campus can download the app, and they can opt in to having the test results from the campus testing pushed right to their phone. And those test results then, their test results are integrated in the back end with some rules that we collaborated with Champaign-Urbana Public Health District to write. We wrote the rules with their advice and counsel and approval. And so, for instance, if you've got a positive test, you'll be asked to go into isolation immediately, and we give you access to a professional care team of health professionals who will help you understand what the diagnosis means and what your next step should be. If you're a student, those professionals will come from McKinley. And if you're an employee, those professionals will come from OSF Healthcare.
Here's the wild part. The University of Illinois plans to test us all, students, faculty, and staff, twice a week. That's more than 10,000 saliva tests and results per day. And those tests in the app will be used to mitigate COVID-19. Again, here's Bill Sullivan. By the way, he's the director of the Smart Healthy Community Initiative on campus.
The app also provides an access to building screen. And if you've got a recent negative test, then the app will show that your building access is granted. And if you've got a recent negative test or a risk of exposure to someone who's had a test, or if you're in quarantine, because of contact tracing that Champaign-Urbana Public Health District has conducted, then your access to building screen will be denied. The access will be denied, and you won't be able to get into campus buildings until you've satisfied the requirements to get out of quarantine or isolation.
The way this works is super cool. Right now, the Safer Illinois app status card on my phone tells me I cannot enter a building on campus. It's orange and says access denied. It also tells me I have a potential exposure. Well, that's the default screen when your saliva test is more than 4 days old. My last test was August 5. Here's where the really techie part of the app comes into play. It has to do with the Bluetooth. I can turn this part on or off if I want, and even when it's on, there's no tracking happening. But when it's on, my phone keeps track of all the other phones around me. If one of those is in the pocket of someone that shows up positive for coronavirus later on, my phone will know it, and it'll give me directions on what to do. I won't know who or where, but I will know which day. There's so very much more to this, and Monday after 2:30, I hope you can tune in to the home station, WILL AM 580, for the rest of this story. It's a good 18 minutes with Bill Sullivan. On this Friday, we're joined by Eric Snodgrass at Agrible Nutrien Ag Solutions to discuss the weather forecast. It's another beautiful day, Eric. Thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, it's good to be back on a good, cool August day.
You bet. Hey, however, it's been probably as interesting a week in the Midwest as I remember. And usually, well, there's a lot of damage. There is a lot of damage. But this thing called the derecho, we haven't really talked about on our program yet. I'm wondering if you can tell me how often that happens and a little bit about what it is.
Yeah, so when we use the term derecho, it's just a term that we've been using in atmospheric sciences for a very long time to describe squall lines, you know, those lines of storms that often produce damage, usually over a multi-state area constitutes major crop damage or major damage to infrastructure or cities. And so that tends to be the when we use that terminology. But it is just a line of storms. It's just one that, well, for example, the one that went on Monday started off in South Dakota, cut across parts of Nebraska, then gained strength as it went through Iowa, eventually got into Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. And along its way, which, by the way, that's 700 miles, it had an average speed of 55 miles an hour. And at times, the wind gusts were measured well above 60, of course, and we had reports that were between 90 and 110 miles an hour in some places in Iowa. So when we went back and kind of did a diagnosis of what it looked like, we needed to wait for the next clear day so we could get some high-resolution satellite views of what happened. And based on my assessment, I traced out a line of where I saw damage from space, and then I used some GIS tools to kind of give me an idea on how much damage I saw from corn and soybeans. And it was much clearer in Iowa, not so clear in Illinois. So we did have some pockets of damage in Illinois, including damage from 15 tornado reports in northern Illinois. But the number I came up with was 8.5 million acres. Some estimates go higher than 10 million acres of damaged crop. And we're going to continue to see as that crop has, some of it's been killed, that when we look down from space over the next week or so, we'll begin to see the change in the color, and it'll become much more obvious on these clearer days how bad this damage was. Now, these events do happen, I mean, yearly. We have quite a few of them. But the last time that particular part of the Corn Belt was hit this hard was all the way back in 2011. So it's been a while since we've seen this much damage to this much corn and soybeans right on some of the best ground that we have on the face of the earth. So it was a substantial event. And one that certainly was a bit of a shock, because the morning of that event, I remember producing my forecast saying, hey, everybody, just watch this area. We're going to need to keep a close. I mean, that's all I said. I said, the conditions are good here for a big squall and a big group of thunderstorms. But it wasn't until probably 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning that all of a sudden the alarm bells were going off in my head that, oh, this isn't just a line of storms. This is one that could potentially knock down millions of acres of corn and soybeans. So it was a tough one. We call that now casting rather than forecasting. And that's what you got to do sometimes when it comes to thunderstorms.
You bet. Hey, so we'll look forward to our discussion next week after you get a look at the satellites and are able to tell what more damage might really be done in some of those worst hit areas. Now, speaking of that, next week, gosh, it looks like it's just going to be flat out gorgeous, although there's no rainfall, I don't think, around during the week.
Yeah, but you know, if it's going to be this cool and we don't get the rain, we tend to be just fine. We've got plenty of moisture in the profile right here in this part of the Corn Belt. And on top of that, we might get cool enough in the evening, get some dews, and we know what dew will do in August, right, to this crop. And so the thing about it, though, Todd, and this is just on me, this is a little embarrassing, is the last 2 weeks that we talked, I had indications at that point that if we did get any sort of a cooler shot of air, it was just going to be that, a shot of it. I thought overall we'd maintain near average to warmer than average conditions. But now here we are 14 days into the month of August, and we've got a cool bias already. We only got a little bit of heat over the weekend, and that was shut down. And now over the next 2 weeks, big ridge is going out to southwestern United States. I'm talking a monster of a ridge. And the jet stream is going to flow right over the top of it and come downscaling toward us on this side. And what that ends up doing is just prevents any big heat coming in. What we would worry about this time of year is a big ridge that set over like Nashville to Little Rock. That would be the ridge that would just bake us and get us, you know, turned off from the precipitation. And I don't see any indication of that at all. So it does look drier in the forecast, but nothing has really shut down the Gulf of Mexico. So when we say drier, we just have to remember that we don't have the type of weather in place that's going to just completely block out any rainfall at all in the Corn Belt. But it is one that has less of it simply because all the action is going to be north of us and it's going to be west of us in terms of where that ridge is. And I'm telling you, it's going to be hot out west. Central Valley, California, seeing 110 degree days coming up.
Anything yet as an indication for September as we begin harvest?
Sure. So earlier this week, we had released some new long range outlook data from some of our global modeling centers. And big things that we are looking at here is we do have a week La Nina we're monitoring, and it's still warm in the North Pacific. It's also warm in the Atlantic. The trend over the last decade is to have warm Septembers. We've just, when you look at the last 10 years, our Septembers have been warm. But when we look out this particular year, those signals aren't quite as strong as to whether or not it's going to be a warm one or not. At this point, though, the big wild card is going to be tropical activity. As you know, we already made it to the letter J with Josephine churning right now in the open Atlantic. That's 10 named systems so far. National Hurricane Center says, hey, if it's going to be what they think, we've got another 10 to 15 to go. So we could have a situation where we get set up for actually a nice transition into September, where we would expect normally things drying down and good progress toward harvest. But we could have that upsetting factor this year of a large tropical system that we just can't predict this far in advance. I'll just say this. I don't see anything going forward into September right now that's setting off those alarm bells. So when I look at those forecasts, to me, it looks quite favorable, especially even for some fall field work, should we be able to get this crop out. Because by the way, across where we live right here, we're 95% of the way to accumulating 2,500 GDUs as of today. So that crop's moving along.
Oh, sure. It's 2020. We'll be mudding it out by then.
I really hope not. Really hope not.
You mentioned La Nina, South America. That tends, I think, to have more of an impact there than here.
Well, it certainly is going to as we get into our fall, their spring, and then what's coming up for their summer. So we know that this is their dry time period. So it's normally very, very dry. And there are a lot of fires both set on pasture land to clear it out for, you know, for soybeans and corn and cotton and other crops, but also fires that are started just because of the dryness. When we measure it, it is drier than normal right now down there. And so the concern is, should that La Nina continue to gain a little more strength? And it's not strong by any stretch right now. But if it does, that could be something that keeps central Brazil away from planting aggressively. In other words, they got to wait for that rain to come in. And if it strengthens later, it's more of a problem for southern Brazil and Argentina as we go forward. So it's something to watch. But as I'm sure you know, some of the numbers coming out on the acreage reports for this upcoming growing season in Brazil are just enormous, maybe adding more than 3 million additional acres. And so that could put a crop at, what, 130, 132 million metric ton? And I think the United States right now is laser focused on what Brazil could possibly do this upcoming season. So we'll watch that La Nina to see if it knocks back those numbers.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. Now up next, a portion of our Commodity Week program. If you can stay with us, you'll hear the whole of the program. Otherwise, it's up online right now at willag.org, willag.org. Our panelists included Jim McCormick. He's with agmarket.net out of McHenry, Illinois, along with Sherman Newlin from Risk Management Commodities in Hudsonville, Illinois. And Dale Durkles was here, too. He's with Grain Cycles out of Bloomington, Illinois. Started by asking Dale what was on his list to discuss for the day.
Well, all of us would probably say the USDA numbers itself we had on Wednesday, but I think we probably ought to add into that the FSA numbers that we had Wednesday afternoon. They seem to have gotten more play than anything else at this point.
Jim McCormick from agmarket.net.
Well, I think we also, you know, kind of on the same token, I think you got to talk a little bit of supply about that damage and what we're hearing of what happened out in Iowa with the lost production due to that derecho that came through.
And Sherman Newlin, how about from you?
You know, I think with the recent market action in the last 2 days, you know, what should producers be looking at doing right now going into harvest? And, you know, I wonder if the numbers that we saw on yields yesterday, are those going to be the biggest numbers that we'll see?
Well, Sherman, I want to start with you because next week you will be traveling with Karen Braun, actually, from Reuters. Those who follow Twitter may know her name or have seen it. On the annual Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour that is taking place, though a lot of it for the consumer end user will be virtual, you will be making a run across which leg? Are you going eastern or western, by the way?
I go on the western leg. This will be my third year. So it's going to be a little bit different this year. They're pairing. I'm going to be a driver. This is the first time I've been a driver on the trip. So hopefully I can get there and back a lot easier than I have the last 2 years. But you know, they're just, instead of having multiple riders in a vehicle, they're just letting two in the same vehicle. So Karen and I are matched up and we're going around for the week. We'll be starting in Sioux Falls, and then down to Grand Island and then Nebraska City and then Spencer, Iowa, and we'll end up in Rochester, Minnesota. So we'll hopefully get a good eye, you know, bird's eye view of what the stuff in Iowa looks like on the western side anyway.
Yeah, you should get a good view both of the west central part mm-hmm. of Iowa, right, where there it's been really dry. And mm-hmm. will you also go far enough to the east on your route in order to get into some of the wind damaged area, do you think?
I will on my trip up to get to Sioux Falls. I'll be going right through the heart of it. So on Saturday, I'll probably make a few stops and see what some stuff looks like at that point in time.
That's Sherman Newlin from Hudsonville, Illinois. He's with Risk Management Commodities and joined our Commodity Week conversation recorded yesterday afternoon, along with Jim McCormick from agmarket.net and Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles. By the way, as you heard from Sherman, he'll be traveling all next week on the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. We'll get updates from him of the first 4 days of the week, and we'll also hear from both Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson. They'll be leading the eastern and the western legs of the Crop Tour. You can hear those updates Monday through Thursday of next week right here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report.